Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network. Emotional, creative, and often comical. Welcome to another in-depth but out-of-the-ordinary look at what it's like to write. This is Writer's Block with Coin6 News anchor Jenny Hansen.
So joining us on this week's Writer's Block is Phyllis Chesler. She is a very accomplished author and has been described as a feminist psychologist. Phyllis, it's good to talk to you. You have many books under your belt going back to the 70s.
This is true. And when I've been asked, how long did it take me to write my first book, Women in Madness? My eventual answer was, probably my entire life before then.
Yeah, you have this focus on women and a lot of them that seem to have the women you focus on mental health issues, or in your latest book, Requiem for a Female Serial Killer, which we'll get into. In that case, it was a serial killer, a prostitute who killed several men. You grew up, it sounds like, always kind of leaning that way. You were always interested in women's issues.
Sure. I was interested in books. I was interested in ideas. I was writing poetry at a very, very young age, before I was 10. And most of the writers who we were led to read were men. So male authors, male intellectuals, male psychoanalysts was what women read, and the great artists, with the exception maybe of George Eliot, maybe sometimes of Virginia Woolf, never Simone de Beauvoir. So we were motherless. We had no foremothers. We had to reinvent that feminist wheel again and again. And I've written about men. I'm so politically incorrect that I wrote a book called About Men. And some editors said, well, how could you write a book about men? And I said, oh, I'll call it All About Men. But I ended up with just About Men. And I've written about the coming generations, how important it is to bring boys as well as girls into new ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, men have been writing about women for forever, so why not write a book about men, right? It sounds like you really kind of, you grew up in a Jewish household and you kind of rebelled against that for a while. I think your parents, you kind of fought with them on that.
Oh, well, I had a keen sense of desire for liberation and for freedom and for no stultifying atmosphere and no girls don't do that, girls do this. Mm-hmm. So I may have been born a rebel. And then once I laid my hands and my eyes on spirited writings by men and or women, I was out the door.
Yeah.
I refused to go, maybe unwisely, to go to college and live at home. And so I applied to only one college, Bard, because they had no required classes and I knew what I wanted to do. So I got a scholarship and I also waited on tables for spending money, surrounded by very wealthy other kids at the time. So I was out, and then I really got out. One of my books, An American Bride in Kabul, relates the story of my love affair and then marriage to another student at Bard who just happened to come from Afghanistan. And we discussed Proust and Dostoevsky and Fellini and De Sica. We never talked about Islam. And when we landed there, I was shocked. They took away my American passport pro forma. And then I discovered that my father-in-law had three wives and 21 children, something that my very charming and sophisticated husband never mentioned over a 2.5 year courtship. Again, it's pro forma. I got out. I managed to get out.
That was before the days of Facebook and the internet where you could learn a lot about someone. So I could see how that could happen.
But, you know, women are still marrying men from exotic foreign lands. Yeah. viewing them as either wealthy or prince-like, a way of getting out of Dodge and having a very special life. Mm-hmm. And they discover most that they're trapped, that the children do not belong to them, that their husbands may take other wives and totally neglect them, that they may have to live with their mother-in-laws, which I did, which is, again, what's done. It's pro forma. Then if they want to return, it's not so easy. They'd have to leave their children. If they try to take them, it's a battle royal. Mm. So I don't regret. It taught me so much. I understood. Once 9/11 happened, I had a different kind of understanding about the so-called clash of cultures. Even though there were many things that called to me from the East and still do, it is not the West. It is truly different. Here, women are beaten. Women are trafficked. Bad things happen to good girls and to so-called bad girls. There are none, by the way. But you get honor killed in among Muslims, among Hindus, and to a lesser extent among Sikhs. If you refuse to marry your first cousin, if you want to leave a very violent husband who's your first cousin, if you don't want a veil, if you want a higher education, if someone says they saw you talking to a boy, you die.
I think a lot of people think, oh, that doesn't happen now. But you're saying it very much does happen.
Oh, very much. Yes. And it happens in the United States and Canada and all over Europe. And then, of course, in India and in immigrant communities all over Europe. And then in the third or fourth world. Absolutely.
And so did you start writing your books to as your kind of way of getting that information out there about these various issues and topics and kind of fighting back a little bit?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm kind of amazed that Women in Madness, which did change women's lives when it came out and remains, the woman who recently read the audiobook for it said to me, "My, how timely, how relevant." And I said, "Ah, thank you, but what you're saying is really depressing me." And she goes, "What do you mean? I'm complimenting you." And I said, "I started working on it more than 50 years ago. I would have thought that by now, womankind would have evolved." I was wrong. I thanked her for her sweet words. Mm-hmm. But what I'm amazed by is how I managed to put it all together by myself at so young an age. It's as if the women from mental asylums, falsely imprisoned and so badly treated, were calling out to me.
So you wrote this Requiem for a female serial killer. That is out. People don't think of serial killers being female, but they do happen. And Eileen Wuornos is someone who you focused on. So tell me about her and why you wanted to write a book about her.
Well, let me just jump in first to say that she also was raped and impregnated when she was 13 and a half mm-hmm. by a friend of her grandfather's father. He pretended he was her father. And she became pregnant. And they, of course, forced her to go to a home for unwed mothers and forced her to give away the child. Not that she would have wanted to keep the child. And so the bad deeds performed by men, women get to suffer and are punished for them. So Wuornos had a god-awful childhood. And I now have more compassion for her, not less than before. She had some kind of organic brain syndrome or a traumatic brain injury, I suspect. And she couldn't hear and she couldn't see. And she had very poor attention span. And she was beaten savagely. She was bullied shamefully. No adult was in the room who stopped any of this. Nobody took her out of this home and said, "We have a better place for you." So she hit the road selling sex for food mm-hmm. and for music and for beer when she was still a teenager. Nobody rescued her. That means the state of Michigan paid no attention. And this is horrifying because her her trajectory is very similar to that of girls and women who get trapped in prostitution. They're not trafficked. They're home lives of cruelty. Mm-hmm. Track them into lives of hell with no exit. And so all she could do was this. She couldn't figure out. She was a little bit childlike, even though she was very cunning and smart and talented as an artist. But she couldn't figure out a way out of this. So she got arrested for the stupidest things. And I try to tell the story through her eyes, from her point of view. I try to get inside her head. And what she'd say is, listen, no one ever gave me a break. No one ever helped me. Mm-hmm. And when I jumped into this guy's car, how did I know it was a stolen car? How did I know he had a stolen gun under his seat? So when the cops stopped us, I jumped out, but he drew his gun and I got arrested, but it wasn't my fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, so she would see all these things that happened to her in this way. Mm-hmm. And I got involved in her case because I thought the jury needed to hear that prostitution is the greatest violence against women, that male serial killers go for prostitutes or for women who they think are prostitutes, all of us. And her first murder, I believe, was in self-defense, but could she go to the police and say, I know there's a warrant out for my arrest. I know you consider me a criminal, but this guy really tried to kill me. They just wouldn't have believed her. Therefore, she went home. She drank heavily. She spent a couple of weeks off the road and then hit the road again because she had to eat.
Mm-hmm. And then do you think that's kind of where the light switched on, I guess, as far as, you know, after that traumatic experience that then she decided that was a thing that she was going to keep doing as far as how many men was it? Seven that she killed?
Seven.
Yeah.
That's a really important question. I wrestle with it in the book, and she's a very unique kind of serial killer, which I'll explain in a bit. I think after the first murder, something changed. Now, whether it unleashed a righteous rage in her, which had been brewing her entire life, whether she wouldn't take it anymore. If a guy wanted to do something she didn't want to do, and he wrestled with her, she killed him. Maybe, let's go further, maybe cops, and she killed two police officers, one a former reserve and one currently something, mm-hmm. some kind of official. Mm-hmm. They represent law and order, but very often if you talk to prostituted women, they'll say, oh yeah, they'll want it for free. And if not, they'll arrest you. So they threaten. So maybe one of these cops said, you're going to do this, whether you like it or not, or I'm going to arrest you, mm-hmm. flashing a badge at him, killed him. And maybe there's another example of what I dubbed sarcastically her personal affirmative action program. Maybe if she needed their money and they had money and cars, big cars and wives and children and fancy homes and she had nothing and they didn't want to buy her services, she might have killed them for that reason too, because she needed the money. Now, what makes her a totally unique female serial killer, and this, by the way, is all conjecture on my part. You have to look at it as something that happens in a war. There's been a war against women, certainly a war against prostituted girls and women. And in war, people freak out. People have post-traumatic stress. And they believe that they're defending their lives, even if it's a flashback. So that may also be involved. But other abused girls, as abused as Warnos was, they don't go, they don't come out shooting like Thelma and Louise. Absolutely not. They just go down softly, right? Mm-hmm. Male serial killers mainly go after women. A good number of the crimes are for sexual reasons, and they leave their poor victims, you know, in obscene positions. Mm-hmm. She didn't pose any of these guys. Their corpses, she covered them up, didn't want the birds to peck at them. She also wasn't organized the way Ted Bundy was. It was easy to catch her once they knew that they were looking for a woman or for two women. She was nothing like the majority of female serial killers known as Black Widows. They kill husband after husband or boyfriend after boyfriend for the insurance money, or patient after patient for money or because they can. She's not like that. So she's not the first female serial killer in America. That was just sensationalizing her and turning it sleazy and tabloid. But she certainly was unique in going up against men who were bigger than she was, older than she was, taller than she was, heavier than she was. It's unusual.
It's, yeah. You know, she was executed. Are you going to profile any other female serial killers? I mean, is she the most unique one you've come across? Have you worked on any other cases like this?
Well, this was an interesting work for me to do. I picked it up after a 30-year hiatus. Hmm. I tried to put the team together. That didn't happen. Then I got sick with Lyme's disease. Then she got sentenced to death many times. I visited her. I was corresponding with her, and I spoke to her on the phone a number of times. And in the book, I've published some of our correspondence. But then I let it go. And I thought about it. I did some op-ed articles. I did some law review articles. And then I let it go. And time passed. And the truth is that I came across by accident five chapters that I'd written so long ago. And I couldn't stop reading them. I said, this is good. This is moving. This is interesting. Mm-hmm. So I resurrected my whole floppy disk Warnos archives and read through it all. And from that, wrote this book. I didn't intend to do so. It's a genre blended fiction, nonfiction. One reviewer compared it to Truman Capote and Raymond Chandler, but in a feminist voice. Mm-hmm. And I tried to be a little funny. Mm-hmm. And I talk about the feminist involvement and how feminists viewed her. She turned out, to my amazement, to have a real fan base. Mm-hmm. She's like Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
She's Bonnie and Clyde. She's an American outlaw folk hero. That surprised me. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, sex trafficking, prostitution is such a huge thing here on the West Coast, especially in Oregon along the I-5 corridor, that I could see some women thinking or feeling that way because they have seen so many people here fall victim to that whole world, you know, and getting trapped into it. And so, yeah, the kind of Robin Hood of prostitutes.
Right.
And I know that's, you know, yeah. And I know that, you know, murder is wrong and all that, of course, but I can see how she has become that. Yeah. It seems like male serial killers, you know, always have fans, if you will, usually women who, Ted Bundy, who, you know, adore him. So, it's just not surprising, I don't think, at all. And the book just sounds fascinating. And I love that there's some humor, too. Well, think of, right, when you think of a feminist serial killer book.
You need humor here.
You do. Yes.
She didn't understand why I wanted to help her for no money.
Yeah.
She didn't get why anyone would do anything for no money. So she turned out to be a petite bourgeois capitalist on the make, on the take. And ultimately, like so many serial killers, interested in making deals and totally obsessed with her notoriety. I made history. I'm in history now. It's not because you discovered electricity. In any event, that was kind of typical. She did not get a fair trial. Yeah. No justice. And by the time they executed her, she was legally insane. We in America should not be executing legally insane people because she was in solitary. So she believed that there were airwaves coming through into her head from the walls, that her food was being poisoned. It was totally wrong because it turns weak people into killers. I don't have an answer for, well, what about a male serial killer, pedophile, child killer? Do we kill them? This is a difficult question. In the case of Warnos, she should not have been executed.
Dr. Tesler, thank you so much for talking to us today. And again, people can find this anywhere, right? Amazon, wherever.
And I have a website. They can follow my writing. It's Phyllis, PHYLLIS-CHESLER.com. And you can buy this book at any online bookstore, or if there's any standing bookstore open in the world,
yeah,
there as well.
All right. Well, have a great day. And again, thanks for telling us about your book. It does sound truly fascinating.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.